Rise. Oyez, 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 the Honorable Court of Appeals for the Third District of the State of Texas, sitting in Austin, is now in session.
Thank you so much. Y'all can be seated. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Third Court of Appeals. It's a pleasure to have you here today. The case on the court's agenda today is cause number 03-22416CV, O'Rourke versus Warren. And Justice Smith, Justice Triana, and myself are glad to welcome you today. In a moment, we will, after we do a little housekeeping, we'll take introductions and get started. Councils, as you know, this matter is being broadcast via YouTube. That is occurring in light of COVID. I think that was one of the good things that came out of it, to give everyone access to the courts when prior to that you had to be here. But in addition, we have our timer here, and councils, I'm certain that you're very aware of how it works. Each side typically gets 20 minutes. Usually the appellant goes about 15. Reserves 5, and then the other side goes 20. Once we get to the yellow, you've got about 2 minutes to start wrapping up, and once the red, your time is up, unless the court grants you additional time if you're in the middle of something. So with that, I'd love to have introductions from appellant counsel and announcements of ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Chad Dunn, on behalf of the appellant, Robert O'Rourke.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chief Justice. Dean Pam Phillips and Steve Owens here on behalf of Appellee Kelsey.
Thank you. And is it, help me with your last name, Pamphilis?
Pamphilis.
All right. Thank you very much, counsel. You may be seated. Then, let's go ahead and start with Mr. Dunn. You may take the podium.
May it please the court. My name is Chad Dunn. I represent Robert O'Rourke in this appeal. He is the appellant. Mr. O'Rourke has been sued by Mr. Warren for libel slander for comments he made in the recent gubernatorial campaign Mr. O'Rourke ran against Governor Abbott. Mr. O'Rourke brought attention to a $1 million campaign donation that Mr. Warren made to Governor Abbott's campaign. And he called attention to the timing of that donation, as well as its relation to a public policy issue that was hot before the legislature at that time, notably the recent winter freeze that resulted in the death of many Texans. Mr. O'Rourke connected the donation of $1 million from an energy company executive immediately following the legislative session where a bill had passed, Mr. O'Rourke critiqued, as not having gone far enough to protect Texans from a future winter blast. This was a hot debate about a hot and important issue to Texans throughout this country. And Mr. Warren sought to shut it down by using the courthouse and a libel slander lawsuit to interfere with important political speech in the midst of a gubernatorial campaign in this country, in this state. Now, it is the First Amendment is at its greatest power in protecting communication between candidates battling one another for the sacred honor of serving this country and citizens in this state. And when they do so, we accept as Americans that individual citizens can hear their arguments, hear their debates, and judge for themselves under the context of the current election campaign as to which mud, if it's slung, or which allegation, if it's asserted, is accurate and is supported by the facts. And we submit that to the voters.
Excuse me, but this wasn't just communications between Mr. O'Rourke and Governor Abbott. This was communications Mr. O'Rourke made about Mr. Warren, is that correct?
That's true. And Mr. Warren argues, for example, that he's being defamed as part of this discussion between Mr. O'Rourke and Mr. Abbott. But there's at least two responses to that. The first is that when you come into the public sphere, into the proverbial central square, and crank up the amplifier to 1 million watts, you can expect attention for your having done so. And that's essentially what Mr. Warren has done here. He asserted $1 million worth of speech, as the Supreme Court has said in Citizens United, and he placed it into the gubernatorial race, and he can expect attention at least with regard to that speech. If Mr. Warren had attracted Mr. O'Rourke's attention in regard to his other activities, then that argument would have force. But Mr. O'Rourke's attention stayed focused on Mr. Abbott and incidentally mentions Mr. Warren as the donor. That's the other point to the corruption analysis, right? Is because in a corruption argument against an office holder, there's always going to be another party or multiple parties involved. So as soon as you say, look, you can assert corruption against the elected office holder, but you can't talk about any of the other people that were involved in it, what you've effectively said is you can't talk about corruption of the office holder any longer, because there isn't any way for me to present the case about my position about the office holder's activities without implicating the third party.
Mr. Dunn, that your argument raised a question about the limited purpose public figure issue that's in your materials and in all parties' materials. One, I've got two questions related to that. It seems like your argument is because of the $1 million that launches Mr. Warren into the limited purpose public figure category. Question one is, if that is the basis upon which you're making that argument, is there any line at which a contribution does not launch you into that limited public purpose figure? Is it $50, $1,000, $10, if that's it? If that's the only argument you have about limited purpose public figure is the money. So that's a kind of a two-part question. Is that your only argument, that he's a limited public purpose figure, $1 million? If it is $1 million, what less than $1 million could keep you out of that category? And where in the trial court record did you argue to the trial court the limited purpose public figure?
Well, it was argued extensively at the oral, I'll start with the second part of the question. It was argued extensively at oral argument. It's in the oral argument transcript that Mr. Warren was a public figure, and in fact, this very argument about it's $1 million worth of speech brings attention. I quoted the Citizens United opinion. So all of that was raised before the trial court. It's not just the amount, though. It's the fact that Mr. Warren is an executive with an energy company. So if Mr. Warren ran a corn farm and gave $1 million, and Mr. O'Rourke alleged that Mr. Warren is engaging in corrupt behavior to try to change state policy on energy policy, then you might have a closer case here. But here, Mr. Warren is an energy executive. He got windfall profits after the winter storm and the tune of several $1 billion. He then takes $1 million of that fund right after the legislative session is over and pays it into the governor's campaign. As the Supreme Court said in Bentley, you have to look at the Texas Supreme Court, you have to look at all of the facts together. It's all those pieces together that say, this is a person who thrust himself into the public sphere. And in fact, the Supreme Court's language there, the Texas Supreme Court, and it was quoting the U.S. Supreme Court, Bentley, this is the Bentley case, quoting the Curtis Publishing U.S. Supreme Court case. The question is whether or not the person thrust himself into the vortex of an important public controversy. One of the central issues of the legislative campaign is what do we do about winterizing the energy system? And one of the arguments from the experts is that the reason the freeze happened is because natural gas suppliers' equipment froze and could not deliver their supplies. The legislature passed a bill. There are merits that people can argue about that bill, but one of the criticisms was it didn't require natural gas suppliers to winterize. That issue was hot and discussed before Mr. Warren got up and decided to take $1 million and donate it to the governor's campaign. That decision, when he knew his role with an energy company, he knew what the legislature had recently debated with respect to this winter project, absolutely was a knowing decision on his part to thrust himself into the conversation. And look, let's be clear here. This $1 million donation would be illegal in most other states. It would be against federal law with regard to federal campaigns. Now, Mr. Warren responds, look, it's legal here, so you can't criticize me for doing legal conduct. And there's two responses to that. First, the central feature of Texas law on campaign finance, it's what makes it unique, is it will have no limits. Anybody can give money, but disclosure is maximized in this state. Corporations can give political money. Labor unions can give political money in Texas. But to do it, they have to set up a political committee. And the reason they have to set up a political committee is so every dollar is disclosed. The Texas Supreme Court has said in Osterberg versus PECA, TDP versus King Street Patriots, copying the U.S. Supreme Court's decisions in Buckley versus Vallejo and FEC versus McCutcheon, that the purpose of these disclosure laws is to allow political actors to criticize office holders for the money that they take, not just the amount, but who they received it from. And that's why many states have banned this practice, because a lot of Americans believe accepting a contribution of this large without any more evidence is corruption. Others disagree. In Texas, it's entitled to its own law, has decided to do so by disclosure. But the disclosure only works if there's space in the public sphere for elected officials to talk about it.
Mr. Dunn, may I ask you one other question that kind of leaps off of what you talked about? You were, as it relates to the limited public figure, you're talking about looking at the totality of the circumstances and when he engaged. Now, on the issue of the alleged defamatory words, do we look at the totality of those words, or do we look at them one at a time to evaluate the prima facie case? What is your client's position on totality of the language or each tweet or comment separately?
The Texas Supreme Court has said in the Bentley case that it is a comprehensive consideration of all of the comments, and it's from the perspective of a reasonable citizen. Would a reasonable citizen believe that when Mr. O'Rourke said these things, that, oh, well, Mr. Warren is in fact a briber, or he is in fact engaging in extortion? Or would a reasonable public member think that there is some untoward behavior here? Mr. O'Rourke is bringing attention to a large campaign donation. In other words, would an individual citizen think Mr. Warren is guilty of the offense of bribery? Or would an individual citizen look at the balance of this and go, an energy executive gave $1 million to the governor right at the time the governor signed a bill that went easy on natural gas companies with regard to winterizing, and is there a connection there? That's the key issue. The reason that the cases say, and none of them, by the way, say it in the context of a campaign for office, but the cases in Texas do say that often accusing somebody of a crime is a libel slander per se. Again, nowhere in the cases is that said in the context of a political campaign. All the cases are about something else other than political campaigns. And I think that's where the court should draw its distinction in its opinion here.
Would that be a first impression then? If you're going to draw a distinction between all speech versus speech in a campaign?
It would be, as far as our research has shown, it would be a matter of first impression in Texas. There hasn't been an appellate decision that I'm aware of where, you know, a candidate is being sued for something they said about another campaign and his donor in the process. But there are other cases around the country that we cite in our brief, the McDougal case, which the Southern District of New York case, that collects cases from around the country. I believe the Nebraska Supreme Court, all these are in our brief. And so it does seem to be the general rule around the country that when we're talking about a political campaign for office, and you are being questioned or a light's being shined on you because of money you gave to an office holder, that, at least with regard to that discussion, it's fair. And look, when this court issues its order in this case or in any other, it calls it an opinion. And that's because we come before the court and offer our opinion of the law. Mr. Warren comes before the court and he offers his opinion of the law. And this court lays down its opinion. And the minute it does, it has the effect of law. And everybody out here that's subject to this court has to live up to it. No dispute there. But everybody out there doesn't have to agree with it. They can still talk about it. They can still have their opinion of what the law ought to be. And in most states, people think the law ought to be you can't give $1 million to the governor when he's running for office. In Texas, the law says differently. That's fine. But what this lawsuit essentially forces citizens to do, what it would force citizens to do is accept that the policy of the state of allowing unlimited $1 million contributions to the governor can't be criticized. It can't be discussed because the law allows it. And that is not how the First Amendment works. The
Mr.
law
Dunn?
Exists and it can be enforced on the subjects. But individual citizens can continue to press that our laws are not working for the people. And that's exactly what Mr.
Dunn, if I can interrupt you, I've got two questions. One is, Mr. O'Rourke didn't just say this stinks, it shouldn't be this way. He specifically used words like extortion, bribery, corrupt. I understand, I think your argument is that in a political campaign that there should be an exception to those. If we were not to agree with you, and we do find that it's per se, what then is the analysis this court has to make? How does that affect our analysis?
Well, if the court decides that a person running for office criticizes the current office holder for receiving a large campaign donation and identifies the name of the donor in the process and calls that extortion or bribery, that is in and of its, and first I want to say that, you know, the totality of the comments Mr. O'Rourke said don't boil down to that, I don't believe. I mean, he says, I don't know what the word is for it. I mean, he offers it a lot of places. You know, he's not a lawyer, and I think that matters here. That mattered a great deal in Bentley. There was, you know, there was a great investigation, or not great, I don't want to describe its value, but there was a long investigation the speaker alleged. He alleged he had secret information. He alleged he went down and looked at government documents. And so when a speaker comes forward with some kind of imprimatur, whether it's an investigation, or I'm a judge, or former judge, or I'm a lawyer, and I've looked at this, and I'm telling you this is bribery, in those cases, it's negligence per se. But it can be negligence per se. But in this case, when it's a person running for office, not coming at it from any specific imprimatur, over the course of his comments, makes it clear he's not offering a legal opinion, that's not per se. But to answer your question, what do we do if the court doesn't agree with that position? Then the next place that Mr. Warren's lawsuit fails is on the matter of proof. He has to prove actual malice. And he has to prove actual malice, and actual malice is not about how Mr. O'Rourke feels about Mr. Warren or how Mr. O'Rourke feels about Mr. Abbott. Actual malice relates to the falsity of the information. So it's got to be made with knowledge of its falsity. So in other words, they've got to come forward with evidence that Mr. O'Rourke knew that this $1 million donation wasn't in any way connected to the policy decisions of the governor. Or it's got to be done with reckless disregard of the truth, and the Supreme Court and the U.S. Supreme Court said in the St. Amant case that the defendant, in fact, entertained serious doubt about the truthfulness of his statements. And again, this goes back to, in our politics, there are millions of Americans who think that these campaign donations, whether they're $5 or $1 million, are wrong, that the government should fund campaigns, and that it shouldn't be hat in hand to your constituents asking for money to run for office. Those people have their opinions. In some states, they've adjusted the laws more than others. They haven't won their sway here. But by saying that citizens out there who come about and talk about that campaign contributions leading to corruption, it closes the First Amendment space. There are opportunities for citizens to stay out of the public fear. But the minute you give $1 million to a gubernatorial candidate in one of the large states in Texas, you can expect attention. And Mr. O'Rourke's attention was not libel slander.
Thank you, counsel. Let me hear from the appellees. Yes, sir.
May it please the court.
Yes, sir.
We're here today because Beto O'Rourke told millions of his followers that my client, Kelsey Warren, engaged in bribery, corruption, and extortion, and that he profited from the death of his fellow Texans simply because Mr. Warren gave a perfectly legal campaign contribution to the candidate of his choosing, Governor Abbott. It's undisputed what he said, and there were 25 such statements in the record, and it's undisputed that none of those things are true. The defamatory statements in this case are just like what the court saw in Belcher v. King in this court, in Bentley v. Button, in Dixon v. Afaya, in N. Ray Lipsky. In all of those cases, there were defamatory statements where the accusation was of a crime. And in all of those cases, the statements were found to be defamatory per se because it was objectively verifiable that they were false. You can look to the law. A campaign contribution is not a bribe as a matter of law in Texas. Carey v. State held that years ago.
So if it can't be a bribe and it's not a crime, then what does it matter what Mr. O'Rourke calls it if no crime is committed?
What matters is that it's defaming and injuring Mr. Warren in terms of his reputation, in terms of his business dealings. He's still the executive chairman of Energy Transfer. It's caused him mental anguish. And unfortunately, because Mr. O'Rourke has such a large megaphone with which to broadcast these type of defamatory statements, it reaches millions of people. And when you look at the comments that his followers put in on his tweets, They believe him. They believe that Mr. Warren is a criminal that is engaged in profit over lives of Texans. So,
do you have any cases in which tweets by unrelated citizens constitute damages under defamation?
So we don't look, I didn't look at them in terms of damages. What I was looking at them in terms of and arguing for is that it shows what how they were received by the reasonable reader, right? And there is a case that we cite to out of the DC Circuit, which stands for the proposition that there's no better proof about what those statements mean than how the reasonable reader interprets them.
And Mr. Pamplis, let me ask you, though, two things. First of all, they were the Houston Chronicle, the Tribune. There were plenty of news organizations that were talking about the same thing. So, you know, your client can decide who he wants to sue, obviously. But doesn't that change the equation a little bit differently in the sense that this is, you know, Mr. Rourke didn't come up with this idea. Most of the tweets that I saw were, you know, him retweeting the Houston Chronicle, him retweeting. How does that impact, number one? And number two, what is your response to Mr. Dunn's proposal that we follow what other states have done and find that political speech, in, at least in the middle of a campaign, is not actionable?
So the first point, Justice Triana, deals with this argument they've made about he just joined an ongoing debate. First, let me just start by saying there was no ongoing debate about whether Mr. Warren is a criminal or not. What those articles reported, which I will note were not in the record below, they were not presented to the court below. What they noted was that Mr. Warren had given a $1 million campaign contribution to Governor Abbott. There's nothing wrong with saying that. It noted Energy Transfer's involvement in the winter storm Uri. Again, nothing wrong with that. What they did not say, and the only person who has said it, is Mr. O'Rourke, is that that campaign contribution constituted a bribe, that it was evidence of corruption and extortion. Nobody other than Mr. O'Rourke used those words. And he didn't just use them in the beginning. He continued to use them. And what I think is so important for the court to appreciate and understand in the context of looking at his fault is after he said these things, we sent him two retraction letters, demanded that he stop saying these false things, noted that he himself was receiving campaign contributions, and surely he wasn't going to take the position that those were bribes. He didn't stop. We filed the lawsuit in February. 3 weeks after we filed the lawsuit, he convened a press conference for the sole purpose of talking about this lawsuit. And you would expect that if he had made a mistake, it was a slip of tongue, he didn't mean to accuse Mr. Warren of bribery, corruption, or extortion, that he would have backed off of those statements. He did not. He doubled down. He referred to everything he was saying as facts. He told the news media there at that press conference that this is the corrupt deal that I've been trying to draw your attention to. And he continued to do it, and that was with the benefit of legal counsel already on board. This lawsuit was accepted by his election lawyers out of D.C., who certainly know better and know that this is not how, that this could not constitute a bribe. So Mr. O'Rourke knew it. He himself received multiple million-dollar campaign contributions from the likes of George Soros, from FTX's CEO and founder, Sam Bankman-Fried. He knew that it was not illegal to do this, but he led everybody out in his public, the millions of followers that he has, to believe that. And it's also important in the context of deciding his state of mind, what he omitted to tell them. And that is that the size and timing of the donation doesn't matter. He left out the context around it. The time at which Mr. Warren gave this campaign contribution was right after the Texas legislative session closed. And it was a time where Governor Abbott was able to raise approximately a fifth of what he ended up raising throughout his entire candidacy. It's the time that everybody starts giving money because that's when they need it the most for their what was going to be a contested primary. And it was a highly contested one. The size doesn't matter because the Texas legislature has decided that.
Would you answer the second question?
Yes, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, that's okay.
So there is no special category of speech or no special protections for political speech in Texas or elsewhere that I'm aware of. In fact, most recently in Dominion, the Dominion case, so popular out of the D.C. Circuit, the court there found there is no blanket immunity for any sort of political speech. Politicians don't enjoy a right to defame people of right, and especially not people who aren't their political opponents. Mr. Warren has never run for state office. He is a private individual. We put in his affidavit confirming that he's never spoken publicly about Winter Storm Uri, about gas prices. He didn't show up with a big, check to give Governor Abbott and make a big press splash. He wrote that check in private, if he even wrote it himself.
But campaign donations are matters of public record, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes.
So it doesn't matter whether he writes it in private, it's still public record.
Yeah, the point I'm making is this goes towards whether he was injecting himself into the public arena. Was he a limited purpose public figure simply because he wrote a campaign check for $1 million? And I submit the answer is absolutely not. There is no precedent in this state or elsewhere that holds that somebody becomes a public figure simply by writing a check. And to Chief Justice's earlier question, the only argument that I can recall was made at the trial court below was during oral argument, where the judge asked opposing counsel, are you saying that anybody who gives a campaign contribution, no matter how small, becomes a public figure? And I believe the record will show he said, yes, anybody. This is the type of line drawing exercise that the legislature does, not courts.
And counsel, if I heard you correctly, you were saying there were 25 communications. In looking at the exhibits, it looked to me like your client was referenced in 7 by name. So what is your client's position about talking about the energy companies, talking about CEOs gave 4-point-something million dollars? What is your position when your client is not directly called out as it relates to your claim of defamation prima facie case?
Yes, Your Honor. So as you had pointed out when questioning opposing counsel, the state of Texas looks at the totality of all these communications together to get the gist of them, right? And so Mr. O'Rourke had been out there defaming my client, calling him a criminal. Occasionally he would just say, this is what the energy executives in Texas did. But the only energy executive he ever named was my client, Mr. Warren. And why did he do it? He did it early on to lay down a marker. He wasn't getting the $1 million campaign contributions at that time. He laid down a marker to let other wealthy donors know, if you do this, I'm going to call you out as well. He did it for his own political gain. And I do believe that's why he continued to do it after we filed the lawsuit. He used this lawsuit in his campaign advertisements to try and raise money. He said he needed money to defend against this lawsuit, to fight against this lawsuit because he was being attacked. This isn't the type of lawsuit that the TCPA was meant to prevent. Nothing has stopped him from speaking. He continued to do it. The problem here is one of Mr. O'Rourke's making. He chose to target a private individual. And back to the point I was making earlier, in Mr. Warren's affidavit that we submitted before the trial court below, pointed out he's not given any interviews to anybody since stepping down as CEO of Energy Transfer in 2020 before all of this started. He's not an executive of Energy Transfer who's running the company day to day anymore. And he wasn't at the time these statements were made. But Mr. O'Rourke knew in order to make his story sound plausible, he had to say that. So he referred to him as the CEO of Energy Transfer, even though a 2-second Google search will show you he hasn't been that since 2020. He never spoke out publicly about any of these issues, including the defamatory statements or this lawsuit. He has maintained his privacy. And when you look at the kind of cases that are out there in terms of public figures, or CEOs public figures, you have the Tavaroulis case. That's a case that dealt with the CEO of ExxonMobil. And the argument that was being made there was that he was a public figure because he was the CEO of the largest company in the United States at the time. And the D.C. Circuit said, no, that's not enough. In Texas, we have the Scripps case in Corpus Christi, where similar argument was made about a CEO of a chamber of commerce there. And again, it failed. What they're asking you to do here is to conclude that $1 million or any campaign contribution makes you a public figure, opens you up to attack that you can't defend against unless you prove actual malice. And there is no precedent for that whatsoever.
But Council, is there any significance that, you know, one of the things, if I read the exhibits correctly, the use of the word corrupt and extortion primarily was focused on the energy companies in general. The word bribe was directly connected to Warren. But bribe and giving campaign contributions, by definition, is not a bribe. So is he really accusing your client of a crime when giving campaign contributions is not a bribe?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, this is the exact situation that the court saw in Belcher here and that the Supreme Court saw in Bentley. And I will say, in both of those cases, there were accusations of judges being corrupt. One of them was a lawsuit brought by a judge, a public official, who was accused of being corrupt. And it was determined that it was an objectively verifiable false fact. The same is true here. Mr. Warren's affidavit proves that those statements were false. There's nothing to controvert them. They don't challenge that those statements are false at all. And because they're false, they are defamatory. And because they accuse him of a crime, they're defamatory per se, whether it actually was a crime or not. If it wasn't a crime and Mr. Rourke knew that, he should have told his followers, this is not a crime. He wanted them to believe that his opponent was being supported by a criminal.
Is that not kind of a basis that maybe then it was O'Rourke non-lawyer's opinion that giving campaign contributions could constitute a bribe when legally it can't?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, especially in the case of Mr. O'Rourke. Mr. O'Rourke has run for office many times, and in running for office of the governor of Texas, he signed multiple campaign finance reports that are in the record, where he attested to his knowledge of Texas election law. He said, I know what the law is. And the law is that it's not a bribe. He took $1 million campaign contributions himself. Plus, I mean, there was an insane amount of money that both sides raised in this election campaign. Not once did I hear anybody say that anything that Mr. O'Rourke had received was a bribe or corrupt. And I'm sure if someone had, there would probably be a lawsuit over that. However, he definitely knew, and if he didn't know, he certainly knew when we told him in the retraction letters twice before we filed suit. We then filed a lawsuit, and that lawsuit contains very detailed the very detailed statements he made, as well as proof that they're false. And he continued to do it. He didn't say, no, you've misunderstood me, that's not what I meant. He doubled and tripled down. He went to a press conference where he had demonstratives for 30 minutes and talked about my client and how all these things he had done were statements of fact. And we know that they're verifiably false. That was with the benefit of counsel on board. He already had counsel of record. As I said, these lawyers out of D.C. that are his election lawyers were on board and certainly could have advised him, could have helped him with an investigation. In terms of, you know, jumping to the actual malice standard, there were two other things that I think that bear mentioning. The selective omission of facts, as I mentioned before, not telling his followers that there was absolutely nothing wrong with the timing of this campaign contribution. In fact, so many other people donated at that same time at the beginning of the campaign because that's when the governor needed it the most for his primary challenge, and that there was nothing wrong with the size of the campaign contribution. I'm sure Mr. O'Rourke had received those type of contributions when he was running for president or running for Senate. He knew that. And then secondly, the type of language that he used, I believe, is the very type of vulgar and insulting language that this court was referring to in Belcher v. King. In that case, the court said that because the defendant had used the word spy and traitor in describing the plaintiff, that was evidence of actual malice. What we have here is actually much worse. setting aside all the statements that were made up to South by Southwest, at a South by Southwest interview on stage, Mr. O'Rourke, at the time when Vladimir Putin and his army were invading Ukraine and killing thousands, not hundreds of thousands, of Ukrainians, referred to my client, Mr. Warren, and said that he was like a Russian oligarch who was responsible for the death of Texans. That's insulting and vulgar language. Verifiably false, again. But it does show his state of mind. I believe he knew these statements were false. At a minimum, he should have known, which satisfies the negligence standard, and at a minimum for actual malice, it was a failure to conduct any serious investigation to figure out whether it was true or not. We told him they were false, and he continued to do it, despite that.
Counsel, a couple of questions as it relates to the oligarch statement. And I can tell you the exhibit related to that is not, it doesn't appear to be a complete exhibit. We're reaching out to the court clerk on that because the oligarch statement is not in the exhibit that made it to the third court, although it's referenced in briefing. As it relates to oligarch, if that were the only statement made, is it your position that that would constitute negligence per se? Or since that being an oligarch is not a crime, it's only, defamation per se, my apologies. It'd be just simply defamation and you'd be under the old, the lower standard of evaluation there. And I say that because what if this court believes that the bribery statements that are in the record are merely opinion? Can we even consider that it's an opinion when it doesn't appear that there was an argument of an affirmative defense? So two questions there, the oligarch question and the affirmative defense question.
Yes, Your Honor. So on the oligarch question, at the time that this was occurring, as this court may recall, there were governments, countries around the world that were going out and seizing oligarchs' assets. The clear indication or implication of making that statement is that Mr. Warren is a criminal. That's how they are treating Russian oligarchs when they go out and seize their homes and seize their yachts and seize their, I think one had a soccer team that was taken away from him in England. They're getting taken away because they're criminals. And when you look at this as you should in the entire context of all the statements, it's yet again another indication that he meant to call my client criminal. In terms of any affirmative defense, those have been waived. They did not submit any evidence when they filed their motion. It was a very short motion down before the trial court. They did not submit any affidavits. There are no affirmative defenses before the court. So to the extent that they want to now say these were true, they're not. I do believe, I think the court's question was, what if we say they're opinions and not statements of fact? I do believe we had to show that they were statements of fact and that we've shown that. And we've shown it through his own words in particular, and he confirmed it at the March 7th press conference after this lawsuit's filed. I don't know exactly how many times he said it, but probably too many to count, that all he's doing is trying to draw the court's attention or everyone's attention to these facts. And he kept referring to them as factual in nature when he was describing these same defamatory statements that he made about my client. He said it himself, he proved it himself. And I think that is enough, especially in the context of a TCPA motion, to get us over the line. I mean, this is not a summary judgment hearing, obviously. This is a very unique part of the process, and all inferences are to be drawn in our favor. I think we've submitted much more than sufficient evidence to get over that line.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mann. Mr. Dunn.
May it please the court.
Mr. Dunn, I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt you off the bat because you don't have that much time. Do you agree with Mr. Pample's statement that y'all are not contesting whether these statements were false?
No, but ultimately the decision of truth or falsity is for later proceedings in this case.
I understand, but I mean, he seemed pretty certain that y'all were, I was just curious whether y'all were
And that actually hits my point. Do we want to live in a world where after political campaigns, we're going to have jury trials about what candidates said along the way? I mean, play this out to its logical conclusion. This case goes back to San Saba for discovery. And the communications between Mr. Warren and Governor Abbott, communications between him and his campaign staff, the any communications that were had about the bill along the way. The governor's office is going to be devoting time and attention to having to testify and provide information in this case so that the jury can determine what exactly were the circumstances of this $1 million. That is exactly the kind of activity that chills speech. That's why, you know, I mean, and it's not just here, right? This court's opinion is incredibly influential. It's essentially the D.C. Circuit of our state. And if this court finds that this kind of conduct can be subject to libel slander, then when a candidate or a citizen says the governor is a murderer because he didn't grant clemency to somebody about to be executed, that's going to be libel and slander. Somebody comes forward and says that abortion clinic are murderers because they continue to allow abortion in a state where that was continued to be lawful, that's now going to be libel and slander. I mean, and another issue is a candidate comes forward and says the last election was stolen, even though 60 some odd courts around the country have heard evidence and determined that it wasn't. That's now going to be libel and slander we're going to go to trial on. Our political discourse has to have enough space, especially when we're in the conversation about who we're going to elect for office, for people to have their opinions. It may be that the law decided some particular issue. It may be that our state allows a $1 million donation. But look, and maybe it's just because I grew up in Spring and never saw $1 million and never thought I would. But you sit down and you write a check for $1 million to the governor of a state, you know the minute you finish signing your name, you're getting attention for that. This isn't even something that's common in Texas. Yes, there were some other $1 million contributions, but it is extremely rare that any candidate in this state receives $1 million from one person. And it just so happens that that person is an executive at an energy company whose business was a central attention of the legislature that recent session. These facts are allowed to be talked about. And as soon as you start parsing whether Mr. O'Rourke should have used this word or that word, or maybe he shouldn't have said it just like this, or he should have said it on a different day, as soon as you have that discussion, you've shut down the conversation. You have every candidate now running for office thinking, what can I talk about? How can I even mention their campaign donations? And in FEC versus McCutcheon, the Supreme Court says that we should shine a light on these donations so that they can become a part of the political discourse. Well, how can they become part of the political discourse if I, as a political speaker, have to constantly consider, well, can I say it this way? Is it allowed to say it that way? And to get at Judge Smith, and I think Justice Burns' question too on this issue of, you know, if a campaign contribution by itself as a matter of law is not bribery, then, you know, doesn't that in the inquiry? And that's exactly right. The standard is a reasonable person. Does a reasonable person hear what Mr. O'Rourke offers? And does the reasonable person say that is the offense of bribery without knowing something more? And the laws allowing this donation to be made in this state makes it unreasonable for such a person to conclude that based on those bare facts. But ultimately, this case goes forward after today if it's not dismissed. Candidates in this state hear what this court has to say and determine whether or not they can raise attention to campaign contributions, other relationships between office holders and their supporters. And discovery continues about what exactly occurred here. That is an unnecessary burden on the First Amendment. The First Amendment does more work than that.
Isn't part of the argument, though, that it's more than just the campaign contribution? It was the campaign contribution that then was labeled as, you know, a corrupt deal or, you know,
right.
there's something else going on. So it wasn't just Mr. O'Rourke pointing out that Governor Abbott received a $1 million campaign contribution. It was he received a $1 million campaign contribution as part of some other, you know, nefarious activity.
Lots of Americans think a campaign contribution is bribery. And indeed, we cite in our brief a number of scholarly articles that use the term legalized bribery in the title, just as lots of Americans think the death penalty is government-sponsored murder. There's space in the First Amendment to have that discussion. And there's space, especially in the contest for office, to run for office and make a decision and argue about what influence certain individuals have over the office holder is fundamentally what it is that we do in our campaigns. And whether we're talking about school board, county, on up, discussion about corruption has to have an open space, otherwise the corruption runs free. Sunshine is the disinfectant. Thank you. The court should reverse the opinion below and order this case dismissed.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn. Thank you, counsels. We appreciate the well-drafted briefs and the argument today. The case is submitted, and the court will stand in recess. Thank you.
Paul Rice.